probably the most common thing I heard was that people felt like their cross-examinations weren't very good, or they didn't know what they were going to talk about. And probably that's one of the most common things in cross-examination, is just getting up there and you're like, well, I really don't know what to say. I have 3 minutes to ask my opponent about something. And you just start listing off, like, what was your first contention? What was your dictionary definition of privacy and that kind of thing? And that's really boring. One way to solve that is to have pre-scripted cross-examination questions. And believe it or not, I started this 2 years ago, not this last year of debate, and it has been enormously helpful for me. I found that when I, if I actually have pre-scripted lines of cross-examination, I can get up there and have a solid cross-examination every single time if I have those questions ready. Now, one caveat to keep in mind is once you pre-script these cross-examination questions, view them as guidelines. Don't just sit up there reading off these canned questions. You see them more as kind of a starting point for your cross-examination. Some probing questions. I had this really awesome line of cross-examination last year, where I basically forced my opponent to choose between money and God. It was really awesome. But I didn't use it every single time. That's exaggerating it a bit. But I didn't use it every single time because there was often other things I felt were more of a priority than just making my opponent look like a heretic. There were other things that I wanted to get done. So I didn't actually use that line of cross-examination every time. But by the time you leave this room, my goal is for you to have at least 3 lines of cross-examination written down that you can use in your debate round tonight. So the first step in creating a line of cross-examination, the first thing you want to do is figure out what you want to accomplish. Find out what argument you are aiming towards proving. And usually this deals with something that you want to prove maybe in your case, or perhaps it's an argument that your opponent makes a lot that you want to prove wrong. So you want to write down the argument that you are trying to make. So I'm just going to take one from last year, an argument from the year with individual rights. And when I was on the affirmative, I was attacking individual rights. And now, that's kind of hard to do, because individual rights is something that is very intrinsic to all of us. But I would ask my opponents a question like, what are individual rights? But the argument I was aiming towards is individual rights are vague. So at least I knew that at the very least, this is what I'm trying to get out of this, is to prove that individual rights are vague. So first I would have my opponent state what his belief on individual rights are. And then I'd ask him something like, are these all of the individual rights that are out there? No. Well, what are they? Well, there's also this. Is that it? No, okay. Do all people agree with your definition of individual rights? Well, no, it's not. But there's a lot of people disagree. All right, let's take someone like President Obama. Would you say that he agrees with your definition of individual rights? Or would he add something like the right to health care to that list? Well, yes, he would, but that's just his opinion. Would you agree that at this moment, approximately a little bit less than half of Americans agree with him that the right to health care is an individual right? Well, maybe. And you just kind of start going along these different lines that are all aiming towards the point that you are trying to prove. So the first thing you do is try to have the point you want to prove. But second of all, make sure that you don't push too far. And imagine that this argument is a cliff. There's lots of spiky rocks down at the bottom. This is your opponent, and this is you. You want to get your opponent as close to this edge of the cliff as possible. This is your punchline. But your opponent doesn't know that there's a cliff over here. So the first step is to make your lull your opponent into a false sense of security. Make your opponent feel like, oh, this is just an innocent question that could have no possible ramifications. So the first thing you want to do is ask something innocent. And I almost like to think of this is just my own little flavor on the cliff. You're drawing little pretty flowers along the cliff. Oh, isn't it so beautiful over here? And you're taking, and maybe, oh, look at this wonderful fruit tree. Let's talk about your case. And you just start, you know, lulling your opponent into security. As you start leading them towards this cliff, closer and closer to the punchline that, oh my goodness, we don't even know what individual rights are anymore. My opponent has no way of proving what we're even voting for. But he doesn't know about that yet. But then you want to push him towards this cliff. However, you don't want to push him too far. Once they realize what it is that you're saying, or once you ask what's called the final question, they're going to start to fight back. And what this looks like in a debate round would be something like, if I took this line of cross-examination too far, so you admit that a lot of Americans would disagree with your definition of individual rights. They have to say yes, of course, otherwise they're going to look stupid. But if you ask the final question, which is, so, we can't really know what individual rights are. Now, is your opponent going to agree to that? Of course not. They're going to fight back, and just by asking that question, you're giving your opponent an opportunity. He realizes how close he is to the cliff, and he's going to start fighting back. Fighting back and saying, no, in the context of this debate round, we can see that life, liberty, and property are the definitions of individual rights because Frederick Bastiat said so, and because they're the most widely recognized. Now, you've asked that final question, and now you've given them an opportunity to fight back. Instead, you leave the final question about, so we can't know what individual rights are, save that final conclusion for your case, for your rebuttal. You're not going to bring that part up in cross-examination. It's basically any question that starts with the word so is a bad idea because you're leading towards a conclusion. Because sometimes debaters feel so good. They're on the edge of victory and they're about to win. Oh my goodness, I've gotten this. Let's just keep going. So that must mean that. And then your opponent's going to say, no, there's something else. It actually pertains to battle strategy. If you're in a battle, or not anymore because we use guns, but when they would have swords, sometimes the enemy would break ranks and run. And it's useful to run after your opponent to an extent and start fighting them, but if you push too far, then you're going to force them to fight back. And anyways, you can push too far in a battle. You can think about it that way too. But once you get to your opponent to over here, stop and just say, all right, thank you. Let's move on to another cliff that I get to push you toward the edge of. And then you wait until your debate, when they can't fight back, and that's when you knock them over the cliff down to the spiky rocks. Anyways, keep that in mind when you're writing your cross-examination questions. You want to lead your opponent right up to the edge of the cliff, but you don't want to push too far. So right now I want to turn this kind of into a roundtable discussion. So I want you to actually write these things out. So the first step is to find three arguments in your case that you're going to be using, three arguments completely separate to each other that you want to prove. And just start with writing that. These are the three arguments that I want to prove. All right, so have you guys at least gotten one or two arguments that you want to prove? That's a place to start. I wrote up here just because, believe it or not, I still have this sheet of paper that I wrote. It's still handwritten notes that I used every single round on the affirmative. You can all also type these out like I started doing later on. But what you want to do is start by writing a number one, because this is going to be your first line of cross-examination. And what I mean by a line of cross-examination is a set of questions that all intend to prove the same point. Now, my first point here, well, let's just follow this example. People have different views on individual rights. Underneath that, you're going to write, like, this is just how I format it. You can obviously format this however you want, but I'd have, like, A, B, C, D, and E. Questions underneath that that are all trying to prove this argument. And I'd ask things like, what do you believe individual rights are? Now, what this is a clarification of exactly what your opponent's position is. And that's always a good place to start. You can think of that as the flowers that you're putting along the road, or the tree. You're getting your opponent something that he's comfortable with. It's his case. Let's look at what his beliefs are, what he's had to say on this. Then you start to probe further. You start to ask if really maybe there's some other questions, some other things that your opponent hasn't thought of. But you're just asking this as if, even allow him to be the expert in some examples. Just like, what do you think about this? Just to get him comfortable and starting to talk. Are these the only rights there are? But then he starts to get a little uncomfortable because he has to say yes, but he doesn't really want to. But he's probably going to say something like, well, these are the main ones out there, but there might be some others that come underneath this. All right, but there are some other ones out there. Yes, okay. Would you say that, do different cultures have different views on individual rights? Well, I'm not really sure. Probably. Okay. For example, do Iranians value an American or Islamic view on rights? This was one of my favorite questions. Because obviously there is only one answer. That's another thing I'd like to talk about for a moment. All of your cross-examination questions, a good cross-examination question should be bad for your opponent regardless of what he answers. Either he's going to look stupid by saying, no, Iranians view an American view of individual rights, or he's going to be admitting, well, yes, there are other views on individual rights out there. Basically, the way you want to look at a cross-examination question that's like this is a question, you know, they say you darn if you do and you darn if you don't. Regardless of what his answer is, you've already planted an idea in your judge's head that the judge is going to be thinking about. And then lastly, just kind of continue on that, what about our president? Wouldn't he add healthcare to that list? Now, obviously, they once again have to say yes. They can't say no, he doesn't believe that healthcare is a right. Because at that moment in time, he was campaigning specifically on that issue. Notice that I don't have a part number F. What did I not put in there? So does that mean that there are actually many different views on individual rights? Would you admit that this means that such and such and such? You never do that. You always start a question with what, do, or are, or some question like that. You don't ask something that starts with the word so. So before we start just writing these cross-examination questions out, which is what I want you guys to do, and I want you guys to start looking at opponents. If you get lost, start with talking about what you're going to want to prove and talking about some ways to do that. Other thing to keep in mind, though, is that you are not... This is a common misconception about cross-examination. Most people think of cross-examination as a time to destroy your opponent's arguments, or as a time maybe to ask some really tough questions. And while those are definitely purposes, the main purpose of cross-examination is to start getting your judge thinking. Cross-examination is not about you and your opponent. It's about you and your judge. That's why you don't look at your opponent when you do cross-examination. That's why they do that. When you're asking questions in cross-examination, you're asking them basically to your judge. You're having an interaction and you're talking to your judge, and hopefully you're starting questions that your judge is like, well, yeah, maybe these aren't the only individual rights, or, well, yeah, maybe privacy isn't always a good thing, or, you know, maybe he's right, maybe this value really has some flaws. And you're starting your judge thinking, it's not about you and your opponent, it's about you and your judge. So when you're writing these cross-examination questions, they shouldn't just be attacking. They should be persuasive questions. They should have almost an element like you're building a case out of questions. But I hope that was beneficial to you. At the very least, if you had one line of cross-examination, you know how to do it. You could use at least that one line of cross-examination. You're not going to go up to the podium and be like, what's your definition of privacy? What was your tagline for the first contention? You're actually going to have some arguments to push forward. One side note, you can do this as briefs against values as well. When you're writing some arguments against a value, like say there's this value that's always out there, like security. As the affirmative, it might be beneficial to have some prescriptive cross-examination questions that are examining how maybe security can be taken too far.